was wanting to walk up here really, really slowly to give the idea that I just don't want this night to end too quickly. As much as that we're looking forward to getting home, there is sadness in our heart, but it's been a wonderful week with you folks, and we thank the elders for the invite. We thank you as a congregation for your continued support. And I write it in the report every month, I think, of at the bottom, at the end of the report, I always say a personal note. And I always say I would be amiss if I didn't express my thankfulness, gratitude for your continued interest and support in the work. The genuine interest. Asking about the efforts and the things that are going on in Newburgh. We thank you, folks. We really, at this stage, wouldn't want to be anywhere else. And we're just thankful to be laboring for the Lord in that area. And having you support us means so much to us. We love you greatly. And the bonds that we've built up over the years and getting to be with folks this week and spending time in your home and you feeding us well, more than enough. And we thank you for your hospitality. And we will take you in our hearts as we leave here tomorrow. You know, this week, after lessons, each lesson, your brethren have come up and said some really, really nice things to me, and it was really nice. I'll share one comment with you, and then we'll get right into our lesson tonight. But it happened Monday morning. I got up. Everybody was asleep except the 4-year-old and the 2-year-old granddaughter. And they said, "Can you get us breakfast?" And I said, "What do you want?" They said, "Oatmeal." So I just got some water and I got some oatmeal and I poured it in and put it in the microwave, gave it to them. And they said, "Papa, this is the best breakfast we've ever had." And I'm thinking, does it get any better than that? It's been great to be with Joe and Leah this week and, of course, their family. And it's good to have them tonight. I did tell Leah, I says, "You sure you want to come tonight? I think I have you in an example or two." And she said, "Dad, don't." Well, if I don't use any examples from family, this can be a short sermon. But you know what started this, provoked this subject, was one of our members, him and his wife, drove separately to services. He had to go somewhere for work. He came in late. But they drove separately, and they have 4 children. And a bunch of us were sticking around afterwards. Most everybody's gone. And one of their children, the oldest, came up and said, "Can I have a ride home? My mom and dad left me." And so I went home and I wrote him and I says, "You know, I think I need to put a lesson together, how not to leave your children behind." And he says, "That sounds like a good sermon." And that's what I entitled this, "How Not to Leave Our Children Behind." You say, "Well, Chuck, I don't have any children." Well, do you have grandchildren? Do you know people that have children? You know, there's always something that we can connect with. And I'll be touching about that, how that we can touch the lives of others, especially these young people that are around here now. But it's so important that we think about our role and what we can do to help them. I appreciate the song that was led. I appreciate Ron for doing that. And the singing all this week has been wonderful. But before I get it started, I would like for us to understand that this lesson isn't to make parents who have children who are not faithful, this is not to knock them down and make them feel worse than they already feel. You see, because sometimes children, as they grow older, 1 Corinthians 15:32, sometimes they can choose wrong friends. That can happen, and that can lead them astray. You know, evil companions, they corrupt you. That's what can happen. And sometimes they make those wrong choices. They make wrong choices maybe because of a job, city where they live, the mate that they choose. You know, sometimes these people just make some wrong choices in life. And of course, as we mentioned earlier this week in 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 and 16, sometimes they get caught up in the world. They were taught what is right, but yet the lures of the world, the loving the world, came into play. We know our God is not willing that any should perish, but we, as parents and as grandparents, we want everybody to be saved in this world, but boy, do we have that special desire of making sure our own children make it. We want to do what we can. Yes, they are accountable. Our children are accountable. They grow up and they make their own choices. But tonight I'm going to be talking about what is it that we can do to try to prevent ourselves from leaving our children behind. And just even that concept of leaving our children behind is, it kind of tugs at our heart. You know, I want us to be thinking about Matthew chapter 6. And you know, as we go into our first point tonight, I seriously want us to be, well, forget Matthew 6. I'm going to quote that in a moment. Go to 2 Timothy chapter 1. That's where we should start with this. 2 Timothy chapter 1. I'm going to begin reading in verse 3 where Paul said, I thank God whom I serve with a pure conscience as my forefathers did, as without ceasing I remember you in my prayers night and day, greatly desiring to see you, being mindful of your tears that I may be filled with your joy, with joy. When I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded is in you also. We need not to belittle the role that we play in having an impact on our children and on our grandchildren, and of course those that are around us. But our first point, what would cause me or lead me in the direction of leaving my children behind is if I would allow my children to do things that I wouldn't do. I want to stress this because these are some things that I have observed in the last little while. I've seen parents who wouldn't dare think of engaging in some of the things, even as a youth, that what they are allowing their children to do. And they're doing it because they're having this attitude of, well, I want my children to fit in. I don't want my children to stand out like a sore thumb. And these are some of the things that I have heard that have been told to me. And they'll say, well, I wouldn't do it, and I personally don't approve of it, but I'm allowing them to do it. And I think this is something that we need to address. You do something like that, we are going to hinder the goal of wanting them to be right with the Lord. You know, Matthew chapter 6, verse 24, you know, when we talk about this whole idea of you cannot serve two masters. And we need to instill that within our children that we've made the choice and there really isn't that conflict. And we don't want to allow them to do things that they know we don't approve of, but they let me do it anyways. And you think of that, especially if you're bringing them to services. You know, here's John. He preaches a good lesson. Like we talked about last night of staying on the straight and narrow. He preaches a good lesson on morality. And the children are there, and they ask their parents, well, can I go ahead and do this? My friends are doing it. And they go, well, you know, okay, we're going to let you, I don't approve it, but go ahead. What does that suggest to them? The children are sitting there going, what's going on here? We as parents, and I really appreciate that song, because the song was talking about godly mothers and godly fathers and the kind of disposition that we are to have, and our children are going to look at us. And say, well, is that a godly person? Are they putting God first in their lives? You know, it kind of reminds me of Pilate. You know, I'm going to wash my hands. You know, for the record, I'm against this. Okay, go ahead and crucify me. For the record, I'm against this, but go ahead. No, as parents, for the record, I'm against this, and you're not. You know, we, and especially at a young age, we talked about that last night, this doctrine that is set, and people want to create gray areas. But I'm just telling you folks that the world is having an impact on us trying to establish what's acceptable entertainment. Now, Ephesians chapter 6, we read the passage a lot and we pass over it. Now, the reason I'm going there and reading this familiar text is because God expects things from us. In Ephesians chapter 6, he tells us in verse 4, and you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. I did a sermon a while back called, you know, and I've preached it in different places, that we are to be thinkers. You know, God says, study. Well, when am I going to study? Where's the book, chapter, and verse that says when I am to study? You know, if I did that last night, if I were to tell people, you know, I know this couple and I do, they get up every morning and read their Bible for an hour, somebody might get the impression, oh, are you telling me since I don't get up and read my Bible for an hour, that's wrong? No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that you have to give some thought to when you are going to study because that's what the Bible says. You have to think. That's why we talked about the it's there. Hold on. Mike and I were doing that today. Oh, yeah. The healing of the 10 lepers. You know, where the Lord didn't tell them, you know, once you're healed to come back and thank me. Where's the other nine? That expectation. And so we as parents, we look at this context here. And we're saying, you know, I'm going to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And what that means is I am not going to allow them to do things that I know are wrong. I'm not going to do that. And yet you find parents who will just sit there and go, well, I know it's wrong, but I let them do it anyways. And that's not going to help. But I like parents who step in and they think things. There's a couple in Owensboro, Kentucky. And they're like, when it comes to prom time, they open up their home and they provide a feast. They allow the kids to get dressed up and they come to their home and they provide a meal and it's wholesome. As opposed to going to a school prom and with the dancing and the lascivious behavior that's out there, there's an alternative. The point is people are giving it some thought. And we as parents, we just don't sit there and throw up our arms and say, well, I wouldn't do it, but go ahead. I want you to fit in. You know, parents are going out of their way to try to help them, and it is challenging. I understand that. We've been there. I've told people many times, you know, it rips your heart out when you have a teenage son, and I did have a teenage son come into your room and crying his eyes out, feeling so alone because of all the friends and all the things that they're doing. It's hard. But we as parents are trying to be understanding and help them through this very difficult time. You think it's tough being an adult. You know, sometimes we minimize the struggles of children. We go, what are you having a bad day about? Do you have a mortgage payment? Do you have to pay the heat bill? You know, we look at them and say, you know, what kind of problems could you possibly have? Folks, our children's problems are real. Maybe not so much when they're two, but they're getting older. And we just need to make sure that we don't leave them behind by simply saying, I'm going to allow you to do things that we know are wrong. And that leads us right into this. I could camp here right here, folks. This is so important. Turn to Matthew 21. Boy, if there's ever a passage that I would just like to say, understand what's going on here. It's this passage here in Matthew chapter 21. You really get an idea of priorities. Matthew chapter 21, look at verse 12. And I'm going to read verses 12 through 17. Listen to this. Then Jesus went into the temple of God and drove out all those who bought and sold in the temple and overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold doves. And he said to them, it is written, my house shall be called a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves. And the blind and the lame came to him in the temple, and he healed them. And when the chief priests and the scribes saw the wonderful things that he did, and the children, get this, and the children crying out in the temple and saying, Hosanna to the Son of David, they were indignant and said to him, do you hear what these are saying? And Jesus said to them, yes, have you not read out of the mouth of babes and nursing infants, you have perfected praise? Then he left them and went out of the city of Bethany, and he lodged there. You know, when I remember studying this in the past and just reading it for the very first time, and I'm reading here that the children are crying out, Hosanna to the Son of David. And I'm saying, do they really know what they're crying out here? I mean, do they fully understand it? Now, children can have very varying in age groups. I understand that. But here's my point. How did they know to cry that out? Who taught them that? Did the parents teach them? Were they bringing them to a place where they could glorify God in the temple? And the point is, you know, when I'm thinking about this, the problems that happen, and you can cause your children to be left behind, but here it is, point number two, putting more emphasis on the physical than on the spiritual. It's happening. It's happening. Shock treatment works sometimes. So let me just tell you a comment that I had that a brother mentioned to me many years ago. When I tried to encourage him, I was studying with him, I was trying to encourage him to, you know, to study more and take advantage of the opportunities to study. We have Bible study on Sunday mornings and Wednesdays. And we got talking about his children, and he said, you know how I handle them when they get out of line, Chuck? I said, what? He says, I tell them, if you don't straighten up, I'm taking you to Bible study. Can you imagine that? Threatening your child by saying, if you don't straighten up, I'm going to take you to Bible study. Like that's some kind of punishment. And we wonder why we lose our children. You know, when they think, well, let's just put time in. You know, and we plan all these great events around it. I said last night from the pulpit, I don't want to preach opinion. And if it comes across that way in certain areas and you need clarification, please come for me. I'm trying to remember what I said on Sunday. We're not to think of ourselves more highly than we ought. I am far from a perfect preacher. I'm just trying to teach the Word of God. And I just want people to understand what the Word teaches. But when I think about this idea of emphasizing the spiritual over the physical, in the area of opinion, let me just phrase it this way. I start to get a little uncomfortable when we plan events, like we want to teach a Bible class or have people in our home, and then it says, okay, and right afterwards, we're going to have games and food. Chuck is saying that's wrong. Please, for the record, I didn't say that's wrong. But I get a little concerned because I've been a part of that at times, and the kids are just kind of putting in their time for the real fun, and that's what it's all about. Hurry up and get this over with, joking, carrying on, and you know, where's the pizza, and let's bring out the games. And you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, let's do both on a separate night. You know, come on over and we'll study. There's a time for fun, and I like that. There is a time for fun. And I'm known to, and I probably even said it here this week about the idea, no, I don't think I did, but you know, with the moms, I look back here, and I could pick on Leah in a nice way. She says, is it going to be positive? Well, the other illustration wasn't when she was little, but this one's a good one, so she's relaxed. But if you were to ask her, you know, Joe's at work, and you got three little ones there, and I could pick on any mom here and say, hey, is it fun being a mom? Is it fun? No, it's not fun being a mom. Sometimes as a mom I have fun, but it's not fun. There's just a lot of hard work to do. And I think that we as God's people understand there is a danger there of emphasizing the physical. You know, you want your children to do well in this world? What's important to them? Learning God's Word and getting to know Him more? Or learning your proper stance? Getting that elbow up? You know, I'm thinking to myself, if you really want to make an impact on your children, I'm not saying you have to do that, but I was thinking to myself, if on Facebook people showed nothing but pictures of their little girl or their little son studying and preparing for Bible. You know, there they are. They're ready for Bible class. You know, there they are. You know, they're asking Bible questions. There they are playing church. You know, what would it be if you just filled Facebook with nothing but them focusing on spiritual things? And would it send signals to them, hey, that's important to mom or dad? Or if it's all nothing but the physical, the fun and the frolic, that's really what impresses my mom and dad? And I think that if we fall victim to this, again, Ephesians chapter 2. Man, I thought I was going to get worked up last night. It was tonight. I got it mixed up. Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 1. He says, you who He made alive, who were dead in trespasses and sins. Again, and once you walked according to the course of this world. We don't want our children. We're in this world, but we don't want them to be worldly. According to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience, among those we also once conducted ourselves in the lust of the flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath just by others. You know, if you were to tell people, you know, I don't own a TV, you know, you're like, ooh, you're some kind of freak. You know, you don't know these modern sitcoms and stuff. You know, there's just so much corruption that is out there. But if we're and wholesome things that are out there too. But I think, as I mentioned last night, when I look at 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Now, last night, if you'll remember, if you're with us, I read verse 23, talking about the standard of worship, where Paul says in verse 23, I received from the Lord that which I also delivered to you. But if I back up a little bit, in verse 20, he said, therefore, when you come together in one place, it's not to eat the Lord's Supper, for in eating, each one takes his own supper ahead of others, and one is hungry and another is drunk. What, do you not have houses to eat and to drink in? I think that's a clear illustration, folks, where the brethren were getting caught up in the physical and forgetting the spiritual. You have forgotten why you were to come and to take the Lord's Supper. What are you doing? You're satisfying your bellies, and that's really what Jesus had to address. When he fed the 5,000, they're looking for him the next day, and he says, you seek me not because of the miracles, but because of the loaves. Your bellies were filled. And we don't want to do that. And I'll tell you, if you want to emphasize the spiritual, seriously, what John just talked about, you think it's a coincidence that children who grow up and are godly and are faithful, and we find out that they were taken to gospel meetings? Uh-oh, Chuck said, if you don't take them, you're sinning. I didn't say that. I'm saying there are tools out there that you can take advantage of to show and demonstrate to your children that the spiritual is more than the physical. And taking them and driving them and visiting another congregation, not only your own meetings, but supporting others, we would do that. We were talking about that with others today. One of the fondest memories I had, now it wasn't with the kids at that time, because it was a 5.5 hour drive one way to a gospel meeting. But a bunch of us piled in the vehicle. You talk about the joy of traveling up there and traveling all the way back in one night to support a meeting. And you don't think that helps you and encourages others? You think about your own family. I understand that there's good, wholesome fun that's out there. But we're seeing where that is pushing out the time for the spiritual. You know, we're finding people having less time to get their kids to Bible study on time, but they're early enough, but it was only for a ball practice. It wasn't even for the game, for a ball practice. Why? Because, well, they need all the practice they can get. Well, what do you think Bible study is all about? They can't get enough of that. And I think that it's just such a dangerous thing that we have when people want to emphasize the physical over the spiritual, like that's more important. You know, when we went to China, they would always ask us, what do you want your children to do? What do you want your children to be when they grow up? And we would always tell them, we want them to be Christians. More than anything. We pray about that with the grandkids. Didn't I tell you that? I said, you want to improve your prayer life? Have kids. You pray for them all the time. And Leah and Nathan and Jen might think, well, now mom and dad are just praying for Mary and Lucy and Ellie and Livia. That's all they're praying for. Mm-mm. You never stop praying for your kids, ever. You never stop. Because you don't want to leave them behind. It's serious. And when I think of that passage back in Matthew chapter 21, Jesus, you know, he's kind of getting upset with them. You know, why are you upset with the children and then them crying out? That wasn't a literal cry, but you know what? John and I, hey, babies cry. Babies cry. I love to hear the sounds of babies. Church of tomorrow, Lord willing. You know, the next generation coming along. And I agree with John. Boy, you ask any mom. Ask any mom. Dad too, but you ask any mom. Would it have been easier to stay home tonight? Seriously. Would it have been easier to stay home tonight? Well, yeah. Could have given him a bath early, put him to bed early, and then, you know, the husband could have came home and he could have just told me how things were tonight. Or I could have listened to it live, podcast. Yeah, it's harder. I understand that. But you're emphasizing the spiritual. I got to get off of this. I've got to move on. But do you see that, folks? I don't want to leave them behind. What could cause that? First 2 points. Allowing your children to do things that you wouldn't do. Putting more emphasis on the physical. Third thing. I should think about this. Putting the church in charge of making sure your children don't get left behind. Listen. When I went to Newburgh 7 years ago, there were some people coming out to services. 7 years ago. Met a young man. I told Debbie, I says, I am so afraid for them, these kids. I am so afraid for them. I see the poor example that they're getting. And I see, well, yeah, they're bringing them. But the kids, not prepared, not interested, never seen anything like it. Wouldn't even acknowledge you. And I says, may have been bad of me, but I just says, you know, I can just see this person behind bars in the future. The only reason I bring that up is I'm now studying with him behind bars. I'm not a prophet, okay, but I'm studying with him. And he has admitted. That's what I'm telling you. He's accountable. Yeah, the parents have something to do with that? Yeah. Yes, I had to withdraw from the mom. And the dad's another story. Really bad. But anyways, the good news is, while we have been studying, I'm trying to get him to see, don't blame mom and dad now. You're a grown-up. And he admits he was wrong. I say that because the way I started out the sermon. You have children, they're still breathing, they're not faithful, don't give up. You can continue to pray, but you can continue to stand for what is right, is my point. And you hope, like the prodigal son, that they will come back. You don't know that they won't come back, but you hope and pray that they will. And there's power in prayer, folks. And that's why we keep praying and never stop praying. Yes, I understand 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 15, the church is the pillar and the ground of truth. It's good that a church here has a good teaching program and that there are classes for the young kids. It's wonderful. I like that. Churches need to do that. Need to provide that for them. But that's what? 4 hours a week? Six? Maybe a little more, a little less? How much time do you get to spend with them? Are you making time with them? Leah gave it to me tonight and she gave it to me straight. And I have confessed this before. When I told her, I says, oh, you're coming tonight? I got that illustration with you. That problem we had. She said, well, get me up there. I'll tell you some things about you. Yeah, okay, that's true. Well, here it is. Because she brought this up. Where were you during our teenage years? You know where I was? Teaching Bible classes all day and into the evenings. Wow, Chuck, that was doing God's work. Bringing your children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord is God's work. There's never an excuse. I don't care how hard you're working, how dedicated you are. I'm picking on me. I'm the preacher. I'm out there trying to teach people. And you can sit back and say, well, I have a reason. No. There's no reason not to spend time with your children. And I can justify it till the cows come home. It wasn't right. At times I'd get home and sit in the driveway. And cry. Deuteronomy chapter 6. You know, I can tell my kids I'm sorry. And then send an email down to Athens, Alabama, and beg somebody to come up and help us in Bruce King. Need help. A lot of classes going on. One man can't handle all that. Deuteronomy chapter 6. We're going back to the Old Testament now, and we know this. Look at verse 6, Deuteronomy 6. We can't talk about this without mentioning the children here. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on your doorposts, on the house, and on your gates. Spiritual conversation in the household is so important. Sports fill households. At least that's where we're at. I mean, I like sports like the next guy. You know, and the Masters was on last week. I didn't get to see him. I was in West Virginia. Did I go, oh man, why did I plan a meeting during the Masters? Who cares? Who cares about the Masters? I like the Masters. Well, I'd like to get $1.8 million for 4 days' work. That's not going to happen. But the point is, there's our children there, and they're listening to our conversation. You drive home in the car and listen. You want to talk about wanting to leave your children behind? Here's a great way to leave your children behind, and please, don't do this. Okay? Get in the car tonight, and let the children be back there, and make sure the radio's off so they can hear you, and complain about, you know, brother so-and-so didn't shake my hand tonight. Remember that guy. I think he's always had it in for me. Did you see what sister so-and-so was wearing tonight? I think she wore that last night. Just start talking negative about things. Boy, that preacher went on and on and on and on. They're listening. I was talking with Mike. We'll embarrass your dad. I was talking with Mike. I says, Mike, does your dad always have that gift of building other people up? He goes, yeah, he can always remember that brother so-and-so was a good man. I want to be positive. I want to build people up. But see, I want my children and I want my grandchildren to hear me be positive in the light of spiritual things and teaching them the Word and commending them. You know, I'm holding Livia, Lucy. Lucy, sing to her, because I've got to write their names down here. They need name tags. Livia's acting up a little bit. Sing to her. She, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Acts and letters to the Romans, and she gets to 1st and 2nd, Peter. I mean, she missed that much. You know, said Peter, and she'll finish, and then she'll go back and start all over again and miss that. You know, what are you going to do? You got it wrong. Sit down there and be quiet. Come on. Out of the mouth of babes, right? Out of the mouth of babes. You guys sit there and go, I don't have any children. I'm not even related to anybody here. You older members, you older kids, you see these young ones? Pay them some attention. Pay them some attention. So good to see you. Hope you were good for mom and dad tonight. You know, as you came to Bible study, did you learn anything? I was doing that. I kind of got out of the habit here of this week. But some of them are just really young. Most places where I go, and I did it in West Virginia, I always told the kids, after services, stand back there. I want to hear one point. Remember one point in the lesson. I remember being in Arkansas. The kids lined up. The kids lined up, and one of them would say, I've got two, Mr. Chuck. Good for you. You know, they're just kind of proud that I paid attention. I listened. And it doesn't insult me when a youngster comes up and says, Mr. Chuck, I liked your sermon tonight. Keep it simple. Yes, I know the church has its role, but you need to understand, folks, what's going on at home. And what's going on at home can undo any amount of good that's being done here. Here's a big one. It's powerful. Exercising tough love. Of course, leave them behind. Don't do that. Don't exercise tough love. I think it's one of the hardest things. I don't want to belittle it and say, well, it's not really that hard. It's not that difficult. Hebrews chapter 12 is the perfect passage because we're talking about our Father and our earthly fathers. Hebrews chapter 12, picking up in verse 4, you have not yet resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin, and have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as sons. Two sons, my son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? But if you are without chastening, you have become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons. It's tough. Homer Cantrell. You don't know him? If you do, wow, cool. But Homer's been passed on for a number of years, but when I moved to Benton, Illinois, Homer was, he was old. But Homer was older. And I loved visiting him. I always remember that because a preacher that you and I both know encouraged me in my younger years, saying, Chuck, don't neglect visiting older members. They can be such an encouragement to you. And I'll tell you that right now, folks. Do it. Visit. It helps them. It's going to help you a lot. But I would visit with Homer. And he loved to talk about the Bible. He loved to talk about, you know, if I had a lesson that was just pretty strong, and he'd just say, just preach it, Chuck. Just preach it. It's kind of like Paul telling young Timothy. And Homer would do that. And I loved him. And he'd talk about our kids, you know, because as I've emphasized in other times and preached, I remember being over at Pepper Road because we were all at the elders, one of the elders one night in teaching, and I overheard the kids in the afternoon saying, yeah, Dad expected us to do everything that we were told. And I said, can I use that in the pulpit? And I got up that night and I was teaching on this subject, and I said, you know what I demanded from our kids? Perfection. I demanded perfection. I knew they wouldn't be, but you don't say, we want you to be pretty good kids. No, you set the bar high with them is the point. And getting back to Homer with all this, he would talk about the kids, you know, and he says, you know, Chuck, when they come over, you know, they do what they're told. And I said, well, we try, Homer. But he wanted to share a story with me. He says, Chuck, I loved my grandmother. Oh, and he would talk about his grandmother with such love. He said, let me tell you something. One time I was visiting my grandmother. We'd go stay with her. And we were on the porch. I hope we're not being taped and there's no policeman around. But anyway, well, it's past. Well, you can't do anything to him. He's dead and gone. But Homer told the story. He said, I was visiting with my grandmother, and my grandmother said, Homer, go get some wood for the stove. And he said, okay, Graham, I'll get to it in a little bit. And he says, Chuck, out of the blue, bam! He says, I saw stars. And she said, now. He says, you know, whenever she asked me to do something, I did it right away. It was tough. You know, when we talk about tough love, it's tough to be on the recipient of that. I don't know what it is. Maybe you guys have an answer for it, but it was somewhat really easier for me to be that way now than I am as a grandparent, because I went in today when Leah sent Ellie to her room and Lucy to her room, and I popped in there and looked at Ellie, and she's, man, I just wanted to grab her, and it's okay, but I just like turned away. She needed that. It's tough. It just rips at you. Tough love's hard. We mentioned earlier in the week from the prodigal son. We said, what if somebody would have given him something? You know, teaching our children the benefit of giving them nothing. We had a preacher come in, and he told the story about an elder where he was at. And I forget where it was, and of course I forget where it was. But he says, there was an elder who said that when they would, after Bible study on Wednesdays, they would go past like a Dairy Queen, an ice cream place. And he had determined that he would take the kids there if they would ask. They would get home. Dad, why didn't you get us for ice cream? You didn't ask. Teaching them to communicate and not just assume that things are going to be done for them. Remember that entitlement lesson? We don't want to create our children to have this attitude of entitlement. And you just give them stuff, and they don't earn anything. And there's no accountability. And so when I'm thinking about this whole idea of, you know, my role as a parent, as a grandparent, whatever, I'm thinking about my Heavenly Father. And there's a reason why we teach our children to say thank you is because that's what the Father expects. The reason why He expects us to apologize is because the Father expects that from us. That there isn't that... there isn't that double standard. And so when I think about the idea and the responsibility that we have of working out our own salvation with fear and trembling, We need to be workers for the Lord in our own household, our own family. I'm telling you, Ron, you could get up and lead the song you just sang after this lesson that we just sang. Every one of those lines that we sang, applies to what we've been talking about here tonight. And of course, we as God's people need to be working hard and diligent every day. Because I told you earlier this week, when do you take a break from being a Christian? When do you take a break? When are you not in service? You guys remember that? When are you not in service? That was that drinking point with that book where that doctor said, if you have to be alert and aware for your job, then don't take any alcohol. When are we as Christians never to be alert, on guard? In service. We always are. Parents, when are you not a parent? When do you stop being a parent? Do you take a vacation from that? They say confession is good for the soul, and it I have to do this. My daughter's going, oh good, he's about to finish and he didn't bring it up. But I have to. It's not a slam on her. It's a lesson of teaching me as a parent what I was supposed to do. I want you to get your... Well, I can't do that anymore. Open up your song books while I get ready. I can't do that here. You're about to put the song up there. But we're about to sing a song of invitation. But I think as parents, we need to own up and sacrifice. You know, I heard of a dad that was so upset with his wife for disciplining his son when he had tickets to take his son somewhere, and he really, really wanted to go, rather than being supportive of the wife, you know. But there was an incident, and I won't say which daughter it is, and Debbie and Leah's going, well, forget that one. But there was a situation, I didn't need to go into it. But once a year, one of our members... And I looked forward to it because I'm a people person. I love to be around others. But once a year, he would have a corn roast, he and his wife, and members would travel there, and he would invite some from other congregations. Man, we would play games, and I loved playing horseshoes, and I just loved it. I'm very competitive. You don't ever want to play games with me. I'm out for blood. And so I just kept looking for it. We would talk about it, you know, the weeks leading up to it. Can't wait to be there. And then that day, something happened. And I told Debbie, you go and take the two, and I'll stay home. And I needed to stay home. We just needed to be together, me and my daughter, and just get through this. And I'm not a super dad. I've already told you, I'm far from a super dad. And we make mistakes as parents, and we learn as parents to say, I'm sorry. But my point is, what I learned from that is, get your priorities straight. What's more important than having your children get to heaven? Nothing. And so I hope tonight's lesson has stirred up a little bit. I know you're responsible people, and I know I didn't tell anything you didn't already know, and there's much more that can be said, but I just want us to be aware of the lures of the world, and children are being left behind. Yes, children are going behind in the sense they've gotten old enough and they've made the wrong choices. I know that. But I don't want to be guilty of help making it easy for them to leave. I just want them to see how much we love the Lord as parents. We want to instill that within them. And then they can instill that within their children. And they can instill that within their children. And it can continue to go on. But the Lord has given us the guidelines. That's what I'm saying. And I'm thankful for that. But tough decisions that we have to make. I didn't talk about becoming a Christian tonight, last night of the meeting. Talked about duties as being a Christian. But folks, please consider your relationship with the Lord. You know, if you're not a Christian, I want to tell you something. If you're not a Christian and you're a parent, You need the Lord on your side. You need the Lord to help you through some tough times. And praying for wisdom and for strength and going to His Word for the guidance that you need. The Lord will help you with that. Being part of God's family and brothers and sisters. I tell you, there's no better place for you to be is in the Lord's church and His body, the part of the saved, and raising a family. Your motivation isn't doing it just for your kids, but ultimately that's all part of it. You need to be a Christian. You want to help your children? Be a Christian. Be a faithful child of God. That's the best kind of parent they could ever have. As a grandparent, best kind of grandparent you can be a faithful child of God. You want to be an influence on those that are around you? Be a faithful child of God. Are you a Christian? If not, we'll sit down, we'll talk with you. You come forward in a moment. John will sit down with you, open up the Scriptures. I can too. Or if you're a child of God that's gone wayward, maybe we touched on something tonight or this week that you've been thinking in the back of your mind, you know what? I've been thinking about it all week. I need to be restored. I need to come back. Take advantage of those opportunities that we're offering right now as we stand together and sing the song announced.